AutoLine After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence.
This is AutoLine After Hours with Peter DiLorenzo, episode 73 for Thursday, September 30th, 2010. One Night Not in Paris.
Watch AutoLine After Hours live at AutoLineDetroit.tv every Thursday at 7 p.m. Eastern Time or 2300 hours GMT. You can subscribe to this podcast for free by searching for AutoLine After Hours in the iTunes Store.
Hey, hey, hey. Welcome to another exciting episode of AutoLine After Hours. The inmates are running the asylum as Paul and Chip and everybody, Paul, John and Chip and Carmen and everybody else, but Ben and I and the lovely Jean Halliday, they're all in Paris and we're here. So life isn't fair. Jean, welcome.
Thank you.
Jean, for those who don't know, is a longtime advertising marketing reporter, journalist. She's now got her own gig now, autoadopolis.com. Google it. And, you know, we're just going to hang tonight. We've got kind of an interesting show. We've got, we do have John. I came in here earlier. And we did like a 20-minute Skype thing, John and I talking about stuff and John giving us his take on the Paris show. So that's coming up. But in the meantime, how are you, Gene?
I'm good.
Good, good. So what can we talk about? Let's talk about the ad world, auto ad world a little bit, since we're both been in that, immersed in that for years and years and years. What's interesting to you this week?
There's lots of news with Lincoln's new ad campaign, new spokesman dropping the tag retire. That's a good thing. The new look, it does elevate the brand. They've got some cool things to say about their products. That world's first connectivity thing is out of this world. I mean, it's
so cool. It's when you get a Ford, it's Ford My Touch. When you get a Lincoln, it's Lincoln My Touch. It's pretty spectacular. You know, this is part of this push that Ford is, you know, they've jettisoned everything else. It's one Ford plus Lincoln, and they're really putting the money behind it. And their new campaign is very, very nicely done, I think. They utilize John Slattery from Mad Men. But those people expecting John's, you know, his character, he's not, but people are going to take that away anyway. And I think just the presentation of it elevates Lincoln just right out of the gate. And, you know, they got to deliver the products, but I think this is a great transition while they're waiting for their new products, don't you?
Well, yes. And the new MKX is really spectacular. They did a great mid-cycle refreshing, very dramatic. They did a really good job. That's probably the first, I call it the starship, you know, they started that starship advertising
right
2 years ago, which is pretty much gone. I actually kind of like that
a
lot.
That was a good transition for them because they were nowhere. They were dormant. And then they started running that, and that kind of juiced the brand.
It kind of gave them a positioning of that technology, and you knew when it was a Lincoln ad. It wasn't all over the map.
Yeah.
And the new work with Slattery is not about him, really.
No.
I mean, yeah, he appears, but he's not there all the time, and he
the
does
product
have a good presence.
Looks great in it.
Yeah, the presentation is great. I mean, it breaks Saturday. I think it'll be good.
And he delivers a little sly little line in each spot, and I think it's going to play very well. And we're showing the previous campaign. This new campaign is very different, very the way it's shot, very elegant. It's really going to make a statement for Lincoln.
Yeah, Matt Van Dyke told me yesterday that, and he's the ad chief at Ford and Lincoln, that the old campaign, the Starship stuff, didn't really tell you enough about the products. No product details so much. And not that it wasn't working, but just that it was time to to go in a different direction, and also that it was too cold and impersonal, and it is kind of have a warmer feel now, I think.
Yeah, yeah, it's pretty hot stuff. I've seen it. I really like it. Our buddy Joe Iwanek's making news down at GM. He's trying to stir the pot up. He's planning on making a big splash for the Volt on the World Series, but they're not just showing up and advertising. They've actually gone to Major League Baseball, you know, whatever they had to do, pay more money, but they're going to move the start time of the games up, or at least this one
additional
game.
Additional ad time, yeah.
Yeah, and... yeah, they bought additional ad time to do it.
Well, if they're moving the game up early, it sounds like.
Yeah, yeah. So it's going to, and I saw the time, and I'm not sure, so don't crucify me if I get it wrong, but I think the first pitch is at 6:55 Eastern time, which, as we all know in the past, it's, you know, the first pitch has been like at 8:30 or something ridiculous. So I think, you know, it's kind of cool. It's a way... And, you know, GM's all in on this Volt. No one's really sure when it's going to show up at the dealers.
I know, but we've been hearing about it for 2 years. I mean, you got all those eyeballs waiting for the World Series, so I guess that's a good place as any to put it. But it should be a whammer jammer kind of commercial to really...
It better be spectacular, really. I mean, the cruise stuff... You know, we can talk about the cruise
stuff.
Yeah. You know, Joel explained that to me. They could have gone really made a big splash because that's his tendency is to do that. And apparently he was shown some stuff that was big splash material. But he just thought, everything considered, we'll pull back on the big spectacular stuff and we might save that for the Super Bowl. Because they're going to be all in on the Super Bowl. But he said, you know what, I got to sell a lot of these cruises, and we've got to have a campaign that can be sustained over a long period. You know, they've got Tim Allen's VO, which was directly a result of the Michigan Tourism Campaign, Pure Michigan. So it was an interesting, people are saying, well, you know, where's the big Iwanek statement, the big, you know, hoo-ha spot, but, you know, when he laid it out for me, I understand why they did it that way.
Well, it's very tongue-in-cheek in that kind of Tim Allen way,
yeah.
And they do have some legitimate jabs to take at, they name Toyota.
Yeah.
That, you know, you don't have this, and we do. So that's a...
Plus,
that's a
and they've got a ton of money to put behind it, so we're going to be seeing cruise ads for... many, many months.
Well, it's an important vehicle. They need to get out there with it. And I am glad that they're doing the Silverado commercials again, too. Those are Campbell Ewald, but they need to sell truck pickups.
Yeah, yeah. And we'll get into this a little bit after we show the segment from the Paris show with John. But Ford presented the full lineup of the Focus in Paris, and it really is a spectacular lineup of cars. And, you know, the Cruze is an outstanding package. It's roomy, it gets great mileage. It's a great mainstream car that has to be successful for Chevrolet. But for pure curb appeal and looks and design impact on the road, Cruze doesn't hold a candle to the Focus.
And Ford said today about the Focus about the Fiesta, the take rate globally on the Sync, and that 32% of people bought it just because of Sync.
That's been
that is a big advantage.
That's a huge story for Ford. I mean, they were all in with Microsoft on that Sync system. And people, you know, I don't think their competitors really gave it much thought. And like you've just verified that it's been tremendous. And this next-gen stuff, this MyTouch, this is spectacular. It really is. I mean, you know, I'm kind of old school. I have to, when I'm driving, I don't like all the, I need minimal stuff going on. I just really like to have my hands on the wheel and my foot on the gas.
You're in the minority then.
Yeah, I know. And, you know, I drive next to people who are, you know, composing, you know.
That drives me crazy. Me. And they're talking and you know.
Cause well, I do, you know, I do talk on the phone. I have a, you know, headpiece and all that. So... Texting, no. I went through a phase where I admit I was doing that, but I've kind of gotten away from that.
It's against the law.
Well, yeah, but so is 2/3 of my driving patterns, I think. Let's see, what else? Oh, Ben's showing us the new Focus ST. You know, it's...
Spectacular.
Yeah, that's coming here in a year.
250.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, the Focus comes next spring.
Right. But this.
The ST comes, I think, a year from November, December. But it's pretty spectacular. I mean, that Focus lineup is real impressive. Let's see, what else do we have in the business before we run the John thing? What else has been going on?
Well, I was very entertained about PIAC wanting Alfa Romeo and going to wait it out, even though Marchionne's doesn't want to sell it to him. But.
Yeah. Marchionne says, I'm not selling, and PIAC, this is Ferdinand PIAC, who I affectionately named Colonel Clank a while ago, the maniacal leader of the Volkswagen Group. He has said, you know, I'm going to get Alpha, and I'm going to wait. I'm going to wait Marchionne out. Marchionne is saying, not selling. And PX saying, we'll wait it out. You know, it's just like, how many more brands can the Volkswagen Group take, you know?
But what doesn't he want? You know, really.
Yeah, there he is. Kind of looks like Colonel Clank.
A little bit, yeah.
If he had the monocle, it'd be great. But PIAC is an interesting guy. Now, this is a guy, a scion of the Porsche family, tremendously talented individual. You know, I've made light of him and made fun of him, but I've always said one thing about him. He was a brilliant engineer, and he was at Porsche Engineering working on their race cars at one of their peak periods, and he was the guy behind one of my favorite all-time race cars, which was the Porsche 908 Spyder, which is a beautiful little go-kart of a car, and PIAC was behind that, and he's a genius. But as all we know with geniuses, they have their
the dark side.
He's not a marketing genius. He goes off on tangents, doesn't like people disagreeing with him. You know, he can do something brilliant, and then he can turn and say, I'm going to do the Volkswagen Phaeton, and it's going to be good. And it's just like if you raise your hand in the room and say, Dr. Piak,
yeah,
really?
Right,
I mean, a Volkswagen, 80,000 in the U.S., not going to work, and you're gone.
Well, I'd like to know how Marchionne's going to, he's talking about increasing sales from something like 100,000 to 300,000 globally. I'd like to know how he plans to do that.
Well, I've questioned. I think Sergio's a smart guy too, but mm-hmm. every time he makes these overinflated pronouncements, to me it just hurts his credibility. It's just like, don't say that if I felt like it, I could sell 75,000 Alphas a year here in the States. Really? The brand? I mean, do you have the money it would take to relaunch Alpha in the U.S.? I mean, you're talking 150 million in the first spike that you would need to relaunch the brand, and then you would need 75 to 100 each year after that just to get the brand even breathing in the U.S. But to ramp it up and say, bang, 75,000 units? No, that's when Sergio just really gets it wrong.
And most car companies have backed away from giving volume projections because if they're wrong, they're embarrassed.
Yeah.
I mean, there was a time when they'd like to say how many they were going to sell in a year, but...
Yeah, not anymore. Let's see how we're doing on time. How are we doing on time, Ben? Should we run, John?
Ben?
Should we run the... Well, before we run John's thing from Paris, we're bummed we're not there. It is the best auto show by far in the world. It is very politically incorrect in that they put girls, hot looking girls, by the cars with no explanation and no apology. Just like, hey, if you don't like it, move on. And they managed to assemble the most beautiful women who can look so bored. I'll never forget the last time I was at a pair show. I walk by the Alpha stand. They've got these, you know, unbelievably hot Italian women. And this one girl's literally playing with her hair, looking at her split ends or whatever. It was just like, really? But it was good. It was perfect. It was like, okay, it's just part of the scenery. But anyway, John called in, Skyped in today. And we had a nice chat. There's lots of news at the Paris show. And I came in here earlier, and we had a nice little chat. And Ben, if you're ready, we can run that segment with Mr. McElroy from Paris.
Let's do it.
Bonjour, Jean. Champagne, s'il vous plaît.
Allô, Detroit. Allô, Detroit. Ici Paris. Ici Paris.
You're looking good. You're looking a little tired, though.
Eh, I'm not that tired. I'm just tired because it's been a long day. You know, I got into Torino, Italy on Sunday, so the jet lag thing is well behind me. But, man, we've been dragging gear all across the show here, shooting all kinds of interviews and cars and the like, and it's getting towards the end of the day. And so my dogs is barking, and I'm not talking about Ike.
So, do you want to talk about Torino at all, or do you want to just talk about Paris?
Well, let's start with Paris, because I think the audience will be more interested in what's going on here, because it is pretty exciting. But I'd say, Peter, there's two themes that I see at this show, and the first one is super high-performance exotic sports cars that are electrics. Jaguar pulled the wraps off a car that is stunningly beautiful, whether they bring it out as an electric or not, and hopefully bring it out. This thing is, it's a showstopper. I was knocked out by how good it looks. Then there's some others, and I got to go through my notes because there's so many vehicles here. Renault came out with one called the Desire, probably how they pronounce it. It looks like Desire. Again, another exotic sports car that's pure electric. And then Citroën's got one. It's not exactly an exotic. It's more like a compact hyper-performance car, but again, all electric, that they're calling the Survolt, you know, S-U-R Volt. I'm sure Chevrolet is not going to like seeing anybody else with the word Volt in the name of an electric car.
No, that's kind of a real, that's kind of a radical little thing they're doing with that name.
Yeah. But, you know, here in Europe, hybrids are non-existent or next to non-existent. They're on sale, but as you know, in the U.S., they're like a little over 2% of the market. Here, they must be, you know, a fraction of a percent of the market. And diesels are the thing. So now they've got to be worried about what happens with electrics. And it seems to me that they're trying to do these exotic performance cars as electrics just to get people excited about the technology. Because other than that, it's unless you're really green, it isn't all that exciting.
Yeah. Well, you know, it's always, you know, going back to that Jaguar, I saw one picture of it, but it's beautiful. But the fact they're using gas turbines in place of...
We got to talk about that. That is amazing. Yeah. It's got twin gas turbine engines. And
but that's, an extended range vehicle like the Volt. Now, the Volt has that onboard four-cylinder that doesn't actually drive the wheels. It just charges the batteries, correct? And
exactly.
So this Jaguar, I was reading, I just about fell out of my chair when it said it had twin turbines. And do they do the same function that the four-cylinder does on the Volt?
Exactly right. Exactly right. But this one has four electric motors. Not in the hub. They've got drive shafts going out to the wheels. So you got four motors. They're talking 0 to 60 in under, or just a touch over 3 seconds, and 330 kilometer an hour top speed, so over 200 miles an hour, and or about 200, I guess that would be.
But that's a range of about 6 miles or something when you're doing that.
No, they're claiming 900 kilometers, so what would that be? That's like, what, 400, 500 miles range?
So that's using the gas turbines to recharge. But, I mean, if you're hammering the thing, it must be out of juice pretty quick.
Well, yeah, probably. But I did an interview with Ian Callum, Jaguar's designer, and he was saying these are beautiful little turbine engines that nobody else is using. It's from a UK firm, and he told me the name, and I've done too many interviews now. I don't remember the name of the turbine company. But he says they, Jaguar, are the first company, first automotive company to use these turbine engines in the car. So kind of cool. You know, I think two things are going on here. What Jaguar is saying is, look, just because Ford sold us and we got bought by this Indian company, you know, it's not like we've stepped into the backwoods. Look at this stunningly beautiful car with this blistering advanced technology to it.
Well, yeah, I was, you know, I think Ian does great stuff, and, you know, it's beautiful to look at. I don't know what they're going to do with it, but I'm really intrigued with these small gas turbines. I think that's really, really cool.
Yeah, because as you know, they're multi-fuel. You know, as long as you pour a liquid into the tank that is combustible, these turbines will run on it.
Well, yeah, you get stranded in Mexico, you can pour tequila in it, and it'll run.
Yes, you can. Unless you're a Chrysler worker, then you're going to pour it down your throat first.
Don't.
Oh, did he really say that?
So I guess the Europeans at an auto show, you know, it's the cool thing about the Paris show is the presentation is fabulous, and people are really excited about the car business. And I think the manufacturers showing off these exotic electric super sports cars, I mean, you know, they're kind of the backs of the wall. They got to get the consumers interested, and that's the only way they feel they can do it. It's not a mundane, here's your everyday driver. It's like these fantastic super sports cars to get the buzz going.
Well, they need the buzz. I personally don't think it's going to work because, as I said before, you know, hybrids are 2% of the U.S. market, you know, and that's after a decade with 7 different brands selling 20 different models of hybrids. And, you know, EVs are just going to be that much more expensive. You've got range anxiety. So,
yeah. You
know, they're trying to create a buzz about it, and they will, but that doesn't mean people are going to buy them.
What else should we talk about the introduction of the Focus lineup?
Well, the Focus, as you know, now it truly is one Ford. These guys are really doing things on a global basis because, as you know, we're going to get the ST. And, man, it's, you know, we've had in the U.S. market, of course, the Subaru WRC and the Mitsubishi Evo. But, man, is it good to see Detroit putting something hot like that in one of their showrooms with the Focus ST.
Yeah, you know, and we talked about this earlier, but I think the Cruze is a competent, well-done car. It's going to perform well. It's roomy. It's, you know, it's going to be a great mainstream car for Chevrolet, but, boy, the Focus, when you see that lineup and the design reach they've got going on and the design statement they've got going on, Ford's back out in front by a bunch, I think, with this.
No, I agree, and, you know, when you think about it, you know, they got, you know, the Mustang GT, the GT500, the Raptor on the truck side. This ST Focus is going to bring in an entirely different kind of buyer. And it's going to give a whole lot more credence to the Focus brand. And again, to a different kind of buyer. So here's a way Ford can use a performance car to help start gaining market share. Not that the ST is going to sell in big enough numbers to do it, but it's going to give a whole lot of street cred to the Focus brand.
Yeah, and actually, I think the mainstream American car buyer is going to look at the Fords as they hit the road and say, you know, wow, you know, those are cool looking cars. And, you know, I think this Focus is a hugely important car for Ford, and I think they're going to do very well with it.
I totally agree. I mean, and it's especially going to appeal to younger buyers.
Yeah.
And, again, that's something that everybody wants to do is lower their buying age.
Yeah, and, you know, they're not saying that the wagon's coming here, but I bet you it does, and that's going to be a very attractive proposition for a lot of young family buyers.
Well, I love wagons, especially compact wagons, and especially if we got, like, an ST performance version of the wagon, that'd be awesome.
Yeah, that would be cool.
But as you know, wagons just don't sell all that well, but maybe that'll change.
Yeah. What else did you like, that, or what else has stood out for you?
Well, one thing that is kind of interesting, I've seen three different cars now, an Alfa Romeo, a Fiat, and a Peugeot, with what almost looks like a matte finish, black matte. It's really more of a satin, but here's three different brands. I know, okay, Fiat and Alfa Romeo, you know, same group and all, but Peugeot's doing it as well. And I wonder if that's a trend that'll catch on. Instead of having a deep gloss in the paint, it's very flat looking, not a pure matte, more like a satin. And that's one of the other things I picked up on here.
Well, we saw that. Didn't we see that in Lamborghini a couple years ago? And
we did, but that was true flat.
Yeah.
I mean, that was just matte.
Boy, it's going to send all the detail shops into a complete meltdown. They're going to have to relearn how to take care of these, like, semi-gloss finishes. It's going to be, you know, big deal.
That's a good point. Yeah, when you got to repair it, you better know what you're doing. Otherwise, it'll look hideous.
Yeah. Oh, that's supposed to be flat? I didn't know that.
Let's just buff it up some.
Yeah.
And then another kind of cool thing is, you know, it was announced before, but this is the first look I've had at it. Fiat's come out with this little two-cylinder engine, you know, under 0.9 cc, 0.9 liters, I'm getting all tied up here. It's under 0.9 liters, just under that. And that's kind of wild, too.
Yeah, that's
turbocharged.
That's a motorcycle engine.
Just about, right.
Yeah.
But they designed it from scratch. They threw, I think they told me, 200 engineers on it, and they did this in like 24 months, which, as you know, for an engine, that's pretty damn quick.
Yeah. What kind of power does it have, do you know?
I'm trying to remember. I think it's 85 horsepower, and I don't know what the torque is off the top of my head. And I've talked to some people who have driven it. I have not. And they say, it's not fast, but in Europe, you know, you got to get your engines producing very low CO2 emissions, and this is under 100 grams per kilometer. And for a gasoline engine, I think that's the lowest anyone's been able to do yet. Diesels can get that low, little diesels, but no gas engine's gotten this low.
I wonder what this British company with these small gas turbines in the Jaguar, how would gas turbines do, contemporary gas turbines with the new CO2 standards? Probably not very well, right?
No, I think the opposite. And I'm just, you know, guessing, because a gas turbine is what they call continuous combustion.
Right.
You know, it's not like compression, ignition, you know, exhaust and all that. And so since you're burning the fuel continuously, you can burn it very completely. So my guess is they do pretty well in that regard.
Hmm. I'm just really intrigued by that.
I totally agree, because I'm with you, man. I've really been enthralled by turbines for a long time.
Well, there's a new book that's just coming out about the gas turbine. And, and I remember as a kid seeing the Chrysler gas turbine cars driving around town, and I thought they were great, and I thought the whole thing was great, and how Chrysler walked away from it at the end was pretty sad, you know.
Oh yeah, really sad. But you know, turbines have come so far since then. What they're able to do with metallurgy right now to make them a whole lot smaller, a whole lot more efficient, and this is the real thing that killed the Chrysler turbine. They were just so bloody expensive.
Yeah.
And the fact that Jag is putting two of them in the car suggests that this British company is really onto something.
They must be really compact.
They must be.
Yeah.
And, maybe they've got pictures online, but again, I haven't even had the time to go and look at what's available.
Well, it's too bad, you know, getting sidetracked, but IndyCar racing in the Indianapolis Motor Speedway could have set the racing world on their ear if they just said, look, you know, we don't have any rules. We just have a amount of fuel you can use during the race, and we'll figure out a equivalency formula for alternative fuels. But other than that, we have no rules. It's too bad. I think they missed a golden opportunity. You could see a small, compact turbine in an IndyCar, and boy, we really, they missed the boat on that.
Yeah, I totally agree, because I keep saying Indianapolis, the Indianapolis 500 hit its peak of popularity, and I'm talking global popularity, but including the U.S., when the turbines ran back in the 60s.
Yeah, yeah, and Colin Chapman, I mean, he bought into it. He built a car around it.
Right, so. And again, being multi-fuel, boy, you want to talk about, you know, energy alternative and green and all that.
Yeah.
You got it in a turbine.
Yeah. So I have to ask, since it's one of the key highlights of the Paris show, how are the models this year?
God damn. There are you can't believe the woman at this show.
Oh, yes,
and,
can.
Oh, yes, you can. And, you know, there's none of this PC stuff here.
Oh.
They flaunt it.
Yeah, no.
Man, do they flaunt it.
There's no PC stuff. It's an auto show, and those girls stand next to the car, and that's what they're there for, and everyone understands, and no one's hand-wringing about it or fretting about it. That's just the way it is.
I know, and not only that, the other women who are just here, you know, are looking at them, too.
Yeah, there's, you know.
And the bet bottles, because they got cute-looking guys.
Yeah, yeah. So that's one of the little pleasures of the Paris show.
Right. Especially in the Italian display areas.
Yes, the Italian display areas you can count on. And the French.
And the French.
Yes.
You bet.
So what else can we talk about?
Well, you know, let's go to one of the other reasons why I'm on this trip. I was invited to be on a trade mission to go to Torino, Italy, with Wayne County, which is, as you know, the biggest county in Michigan. Detroit's in Wayne County. They sent a trade mission over to Torino to try to get Italian suppliers of Fiat, who are now going to be working with Chrysler, to come locate in Wayne County. And what was kind of interesting is the trade mission had conservative and liberal, Democrat, Republican, labor and business, politics, business. Very interesting group of people. And Bob King, the president of the UAW, was on this trip. And that was very interesting. It's the first time, and I've asked other people who have been involved in these things, they've never, ever heard of a labor leader going on a trade mission to try to bring jobs to Michigan. What a concept, labor trying to bring jobs here.
Well, good for him, but, you know, that also means he's going to have to step it up and, you know, make sure the UAW is engaged in the proper manner rather than, you know, this adversarial stuff that they seem to be magicians at.
You're right. I mean, they got to walk the talk. He's talking unlike any labor leader I've heard, saying that, look, we got to be a union for the 21st century. That means we can't be fighting these guys. We got to work with them. And, you know, it all sounds pie in the sky. In fact, I even told him, you know, if you want to sell this message, you got to walk the talk. You just can't, you know, get up and give speeches about it.
Yeah. And, you know, of course, we got news this week that, Indianapolis, the workers in Indianapolis voted not to take a pay cut, and the new supplier that was coming in to take over that plant, the GM plant,
said bye-bye.
Yeah, they said, we got to have this deal or we're not going to do it. So GM's pulling the plug on the plant, and everyone's out of work. So.
I think those guys have totally, completely misread the situation. And, you know, they're thinking, hey, no problem. Somebody's going to need this plant. Somebody's going to come in and save it. And guess what, boys? You just kiss those jobs goodbye, because there's excess stamping capacity in this country. And I don't know what they're thinking. I really
don't.
Well,
you know, their explanation was, well, we'll get transferred to another plant, and 30% of us are retiring anyway. But
how selfish is that, Peter? What about other people who could have gotten jobs there?
Exactly, exactly. I'm speechless, and I put it in on the table, and some reader was all exercise about me. Well, you wouldn't take a 50% pay cut, blah blah blah, and I didn't bother writing back. But the bottom line is, here's your choice: a job or a reduction in pay, or no job at all.
Right.
You know, yeah, the whole global meltdown has hit everybody. So if you're given that choice, you know, I would think you'd opt for the job rather than the prospects of maybe getting a job down the road. I mean, is it great? Is it fair or make you feel good? No. But, I mean, to be presented that choice and let that plant close, you know, Bob King can go out on all the trade missions he wants, but the bottom line is, you know, that's people's perception of the UAW mentality.
Well, in his defense, and I'm not here to defend him, but the International, you know, which is like corporate headquarters, that's how they refer to it in the UAW, the International, they wanted those guys to take the concessions.
Oh, yeah,
That was a decision at the local level that they said, screw it, you know, we're good, we're going to transfer, or we're going to retire, so screw it.
Yeah, that should be pointed out. That yeah, the headquarters said, you guys really, you know, take this thing, and they said no, and so those jobs are gone. That plant's closed.
Well, we saw something similar at Ford when the guys at, was it the St. Louis plant? They were given the opportunity to build the Ford Kuga and export them back to Europe. They were going to export like 80,000 a year. And they were like, nah, screw it. We're not going to take these concessions to be able to do that. And they just let a brilliant opportunity slip through their fingers.
Yeah, you just shake your head. You want to see this country move forward, and you want to see, as a nation, get beyond all this, and it's still happening.
But, you know, you think we've got labor problems. I guess I sort of knew this, but I didn't totally realize it. In Italy, there are 4 different automotive unions on a national basis. On a local basis, in a plant, you might have 12 different unions. And it's not like one's for the electricians and one's for the millwrights and one's for the line workers and et cetera, et cetera. No. You go in and then you decide, which union do I want to vote for? Or which one do I think is the best? And I was talking to Bob King about it and a couple of his people, and they were saying, how the hell do you get anything done with all these unions? And, you know, inside I'm kind of laughing. Here's one union bitching about all these other unions. It was kind of funny.
Yeah, it is. Well, that doesn't reflect very well on my heritage, but that's been a problem in the Italian,
right.
Yeah, in the Italian mindset in that country for decades. You know, I don't get it. But
right. Hey, I'll give you a scoop here. Here's one thing that I picked up at the show. Going back to the auto show and car side. Volkswagen with this NMS, the new midsize sedan that they're going to build in Chattanooga, that thing is being tooled up to take up to 85% diesel of sales, up to 85%.
Wow. I mean, the Germans are hell-bent on making diesels sell in this country. And, hey, you know, I applaud that if they can do it.
I know, I do too, but that info hasn't come out yet. So here, ladies and gentlemen, first on Autoline After Hours, you heard it here. The new Volkswagen in the U.S. could be up to, not to begin with, they know they got to grow it, but they say by the end of the life cycle, they expect to be, I don't know about expect, but they're ready to be at 80 to 85% diesel take.
Wow, that's something.
But I think that's the top news on the front from Paris here.
Well, that's great, John. You're looking well, and we'll look forward to seeing you back here. And champagne, s'il vous plaît, buddy.
All the way.
Yeah.
Okay, man. I'll talk to you back in the States.
Yeah, have a good one.
You're back.
Okay, yes, we are back, and that Jag is hot.
It is gorgeous.
I'm intrigued with the technology. I love the idea of these small gas turbines. I would love a field of Indy cars with gas turbines and every other kind of power, but that's another show. Other news today, BMW formally announced that they're going to bring out a full line of front-wheel drive BMWs to the U.S. below the 1 Series. Not just one, but they said several.
Smaller, I know.
Yeah, smaller than the 1 Series, front-wheel drive, ladies and gentlemen. Hell is officially frozen over.
Well, don't you think? I mean, everyone's going smaller, partly probably because of the new CAFE rules that are coming.
Yeah.
But it's going to be hard to
Well, it's off the mini platform. So, wow. Hell is officially frozen over. Front-wheel drive BMWs. Man. John mentioned that new Volkswagen and mm-hmm. Chattanooga. You know, they decontented the new Jetta for that car that's being built in Chattanooga. And, you know, I wrote my column this week about the danger that Volkswagen and Porsche are treading on some thin ice. They're going to bring, Porsche is going to get a version of the Audi Q5 called the Cajun, the little brother to the Cayenne, which really, did they really need that? I don't think so. And then I brought up, you know, where does that stop? Is there a junior version of the Panamera based on that Volkswagen in Tennessee? Best be careful,
yeah,
boys.
Yeah, and all that kind of badge engineering, which there's certainly enough evidence in the history books in the not-so, you know, past.
Yeah.
I mean, can you say Jaguar X-type? Yes, it did give them more sales volume, but it really upset the people at the upper end. Yeah,
killed,
absolutely.
Killed a brand.
And, it wasn't a real Jaguar.
Yeah. A couple other interesting things. You know, that Range Rover Evoque, which is a three-door small Range Rover, the one that Victoria Beckham is the yeah, there it is, the official spokesperson for it. It's pretty
nice looking. Yeah,
pretty slick. It's a three-door. You know, I don't think we're really aware of how small that is until we actually see it in person, but that, you know, that's an interesting development for Range Rover.
Yeah, and they also have to downsize, you know.
Yeah, well, this is the reality of the new CAFE standards.
Yes, absolutely.
But I'll tell you the most puzzling thing I've got to say at the Paris Auto Show is I'm sitting there and I'm starting to read this stuff and all the reports, and here comes Lotus with five cars introduced at the Paris Show, four of these cars over $100,000. I mean, it's just like...
You mean you don't want one?
Well, no. I mean, it's just like, really, guys? We would take one, maybe an additional one that was great, but five? And, you know, we've got a four-door sedan. We've got, you know, a Lexus V8-powered supercar. What? I mean, really? Tell me how that's going to work, because I'm not buying it.
Well, they probably got a lot of, you know, free ink.
Good luck with that. No one can see what I'm looking at, but you know what? This ad for the CTS Coupe is very nice. Great motion shot, and the CTS V Coupe, and I think it's a great print presentation. But I got to tell you, Nissan with this Juke. Oh, come on. Really? This is the best you can do? I mean, the car is challenged visually as it is, but then they do this single-page print ad.
Tiny little print.
And tiny little views of the car. I mean, come on. You know, people are already calling it the joke. Give it a fair shot, please. Hey, Ben, I think we're ready for rapid fire. Yeah, here we are. Now, Ben is bringing me the magic tablet with your latest questions. Oh, hey, one of our moderators, Mud Monster, is having a birthday today.
Happy birthday,
Mud Monster. Okay, this is from Joseph. Considering the news that Fiat will pull the Dodge brand out of England and use the dealers to sell Chrysler-badged Lancias, does this give us any insight as to how Marchionne will badge engineer the many Fiat plus Chrysler nameplates in the U.S.? I don't know. I mean, it might, but then again, it might not. What do you
think? I don't think they'll put a... I can't imagine they're going to put a Fiat on a Chrysler.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can't imagine. Dodge, I truly don't really even understand why they created the Ram brand. I mean...
I think that's a train wreck.
It's
I think
crazy.
That was convoluted.
People know it as the Dodge Ram. What? I don't get it.
Yeah, I just think that was just complete bullshit. But anyway, Jim Haynes comments, so you guys reported that the Dodge brand is out of the UK and many models are no longer sold in Europe overall. So where do these results... That's the same... Where do these results fit into Sergio's world domination figures? Only Sergio knows his secret plan to dominate the world. Yeah.
Maybe they'll have another 8-hour meeting.
This is a comment from Tim. What are your thoughts on Infiniti using a Mercedes-Benz platform and engine? Will Benz and Infiniti become too much alike of Daimler, Renault, Nissan expand partnership? Yeah, there's a danger. I mean, these conglomerates, you know, they sit in their boardrooms and their you know, in their think tanks, and they think all this stuff out in a vacuum, and then they come to the market with it and wonder, well, what happened? Why didn't it work? You know.
But don't you think the Saab, the BMW engines could work in a Saab?
Yeah. Now.
But it's a much smaller volume there.
Yeah. Yeah, that'll work. That we should have mentioned that. That's a lifesaver for Saab. I mean, that deal will help Saab make it, I think. They made a deal to buy a bunch of four-cylinder turbo motors from BMW. And, you know, let's face it, Saab, they got nothing. They got to make deals like this. So more power to them. George from Brooklyn, any predictions for September sales? Better.
That's what they're saying.
Yeah.
Better. Stay tuned. It's tomorrow.
Yeah. So, Ben, let's run this phone call from Youngblood in Cleveland about Paris coverage.
Hey, Commodore DiLorenzo. You look great in the captain's chair. You're doing a fantastic job. You look good, too.
I'm slumping over at the controls.
Observations. Your coverage, McElroy's coverage in Paris, fantastic. I wish you had more pictures of the cars, but it's interesting to realize that the Europeans are going, like, with gas turbines, multi-fuel, such like that, that they're looking for different alternatives also. I thought that was very interesting. One thing I'd like to suggest, remember Eco Motors? Their state-of-the-art OPOC motor, that's multi-fuel. Maybe they got it. Maybe we should put some of our eggs in their baskets. My last question is there an opportunity to ask Mr. McElroy if he could have a special edition next week with all the models that are by the concept cars? I bet a whole bunch of people would tune into it. Let's see if that's a possibility. Great show. Keep up the good work. Au revoir.
Yeah, it would be great if we sent a special photographer to shoot the models, but I'm sure we didn't. OPOC motor, that I'm very intrigued with that. I think it would make a great IndyCar powertrain too. So thanks for your comments. Ben, let's run another phone call through.
Hi, this is Jeff W. from Albany, New York. My question is, there has been a lot of buzz on the internet as of late that Cadillac is going to go for it and launch a premium $100,000 plus large sedan in the 2014-2015 timeframe. My question is, do you think that by then they will have rebuilt the brand sufficiently to sell a car at that price point? I would hate to see a repeat of the XLR, which was another premium price product, which turned out to be a sales disaster. Thanks.
You know, I think the difference now is, a huge difference is Mark Royce. They are not going to do an XLR. Whether the brand can support, and they didn't say 100, they said like $130,000 Cadillac. They know how to do it. They have the technology to do it. They have the capability to do it. It's whether they want to do it or not. You know, and someone asked me about the stunning Cadillac show car a few years ago, the mid-engine show car called the CN. No, you won't see that. You'll see a big sedan. The reason you won't see that CN in our lifetimes multiplied is because of the Corvette. If there's ever going to be a supercar from General Motors, it will wear the Corvette nameplate, and it will be mid-engine, and it will be $175,000-plus. But I think Cadillac can pull off that supercar if they're all in and they're committed. Is it over their dealer bodies' heads? Yeah, I would say over about 80% of their dealers.
Well, they have time to upgrade that. I hope that, yeah. Although it does take time. And they only have 4 brands now instead of 8, so they can be more focused.
Yeah. Ben, let's run this phone call from Jim in Sioux Falls.
How do car companies and ad agencies go about selecting a national spokesperson? For example, I'm thinking Ford picking Mike Rowell. Mm-hmm. most of the time the car companies will go for a young, attractive female model. But in this case, they went with a little older guy, kind of a rugged type individual. I'm just wondering how they go about selecting somebody like Mike to be their national spokesperson. Thanks a lot, Mike.
Well, I'm sure they take it's not just all.
Well, first
chicks.
Of all, he's not national. He's kind
of. Oh,
he's
talking about local in your
mind. Well, Mike Rowe.
But we see him in
He is national, but
regional dealer ad.
Yeah, he's
absolutely.
What you're referring to is like the tier two stuff,
right.
which we in the business call tier two.
Like your Metro Detroit.
But, you know, Mike Rowe's got this everyman personality he tests off the charts. And, you know, a lot of these spokespeople decisions are pure crapshoots. I don't know if you guys know, but I'm sure a lot of you do know that Ford's voiceover on the F-150 campaign is Dennis Leary.
Dennis Leary.
And the campaign is written to take advantage of Dennis's, you know, staccato delivery. And it's great. But and then Lincoln has this new John Slattery thing. And, you know, it's just sometimes it's an idea from the agency. Sometimes it's an idea from the client. Well, not often. Let's face it.
But I don't think there's a lot of women.
No.
I mean, way back, I remember Chevy used. Leah Thompson and that gal from Northern Exposure.
Right, right. I forget her name.
Yeah.
Now, they use women star voiceovers in some respects.
That's true. And Cadillac had that Katie Walsh or whatever her name was.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, but. So it's a crapshoot.
So, Ben, this call about Lotus, they didn't know that was pre-recorded?
Yeah, but I think you can answer it.
Okay.
Hey, guys. It's Frank Reed from Bridgeton, New Jersey. I got a question for you, John. I'm looking at the Lotus, which seems to, I guess, have just totally revamped their entire lineup and have decided that Ferrari needs more competition. But my question is, one, at least in the pictures, the cars look pretty good, but do you think Colin Chapman's rolling over in his grave when they've got 3,800-pound Lotuses now with hybrids and V8 engines? I mean, wouldn't it have made more sense to go with a smaller engine if you're going to do the hybrid, take a little bit of the weight out of there? I don't know. Seems kind of odd to me, but, you know, hey, I guess they got to make money, and they figure they might as well go after Ferrari. I don't know if it's the way to go, but I'm just curious what you think. Thanks, guys. Bye.
Well, I think we already touched upon that. I think one of those new Lotus cars is approaching 4,000 pounds. The rest of them are at 3,100. You know, I just think for Lotus to throw out five vehicles at the Paris show, I mean, it's just, come on. If you're going to add one vehicle to your program, add one great vehicle. And, yeah, they're styled nicely. They look like they're nice designs. But I think it's just crazy, frankly. Okay, John Wills asks, what's the new Lincoln slogan, smarter than luxury? What does that mean?
It means that
it's
more than just luxury leather. And it is. It's the technology, baby.
Yeah, it's more than the current luxury idiom. What Lincoln is going after is, and really the technology they're going after, they might
younger.
Pull. Yeah,
yeah.
Younger. It's well, younger, and they might pull it
40s,
off.
40s, I think. Yeah. Because those are the kind of people that would want that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
Sure.
George from Brooklyn, Volkswagen and NASCAR, anything's possible. Now, the reality is, I don't think many people pick this up, but on the website I reported that there was a double secret board meeting in Daytona Beach two or three weeks ago, and the powers that be decided that the car tomorrow isn't making it, and they are going to go to stock dimension Camaro, Mustang, Challengers, and a Toyota to be named later. This is completely flown under the radar, but along about 2013, don't be surprised if you see stock dimension pony cars in the Sprint Cup. And I mean seriously stock dimension. So they'll have front air dams and rear spoilers, but they'll be stock dimension bodies, and that'll be hugely positive for NASCAR survival. George from Brooklyn, is Mahindra in North America for real? It's anybody's guess. you know, their rumblings are back that they're coming again. So we'll see.
Well, I mean, the market isn't the best time to come in right now. So they could be waiting for a turn for things to improve.
Yeah. George from Brooklyn also wants to know, is killing the Ford Ranger nameplate and brand recognition a good idea? The vehicle, the new Ford Ranger that Ford has that got some play in Australia is much bigger vehicle than the current Ranger, and they will never sell it here because it would go up too close to the 150. So whether it's smart or not, they just don't have a vehicle to slot up against like the old school, the Colorado and the...
But, you know, that segment, I don't know how popular it is anymore anyway, because
yeah.
People are going to crossovers. It's more... people-friendly.
Yeah. Juan wants to know, what is the deal with all the hybrid supercars? Did these guys forget CAFE as a volume-based metric? Does Volkswagen plan to sell thousands of the Porsche 918s and Audi e-trons? Speaking of Volkswagen, Peter, great job calling Volkswagen out on their volume Porsche move. Well, thanks, Juan. Yeah, I don't, you know, I think the supercar thing is a these car companies need show horses for these shows. But, you know, yeah, what does it all mean?
Well, how many are they going to sell, really?
Even,
I mean, how many people are out there going to plunk down?
Yeah,
kind of
even
money, really?
Even John in the tape segment said, I don't get it. Rick says, can someone shed any light on why GM did not come out with direct injection on the engines for the Cruze? Also amazing that turbos can now use 87-octane fuel. I think they have direct injection motors coming.
I'm not sure.
Yeah, I think they do. Andre Vieira, what does the panel think of the new Lotus Elite? I think it's great looking, but I think we covered that Lotus is really, you know, I don't know if viewers understand, to launch properly a new nameplate in the automotive market is prohibitively expensive. I mean, staggeringly expensive. Like, get ready to write a $150 million check.
But these are small volume.
Yeah, they're small volume.
Small volume.
So, but, you know, do we need 10 Lotuses?
Well, yeah. Do they want to be a mass market, you know, car company? No.
Dr. Botox, China not respecting intellectual property? I am shocked.
Surprise.
Yeah, you know what? I've sort of hinted this on the site. You know, there is a doomsday scenario in China where the government all of a sudden, you know, rings a bell and says, okay, thank you very much. Now you all please leave and hand over your technology. It's all nationalized.
Yeah, they've already, a few years back, and it kind of went under the radar on that.
Yeah,
one,
well, now they're making noise.
Whatever technology is over there from the shared partnerships from the car companies, which have to be shared, that becomes their
technology. Yeah, now they're really making saber-rattling about the electric vehicle technology. So this is going to be huge. Tata Kaka asks, are you kidding me? Do all of you expect the Cruze to do very well or so-so? I think it'll do well. I think it'll become Chevy's mainstream player. You know, it used to be do well for a car was 400,000 units.
Yeah, they're not. No.
Those days are over.
But, you know, new product generates interest in sales, so they should be okay.
Mirrodart, is there some kind of incubation system over at Hyundai, whatever, that allows these guys to show their talents? Or were they known talents before they got there? Really, Hyundai's done a great job of cherry-picking talent from other people and then driving them crazy and driving them out. But so far, John Krafcik stayed, so we'll see.
Let me ask you, how do you feel about celebrities in ads?
I think in certain situations it works like gangbusters, and then in other situations they can completely
take over.
Yeah,
or
take over
flub
the
it.
Product. I mean,
that's how I felt about Howie Long in the Chevy commercials.
Well, the problem with the Howie Long spot, I think actually he's pretty good, but only one in five of those spots were actually worth doing, or you know, they just weren't well written enough. The ones that were okay, but when they ran them all the time, it's just like people were throwing their foam brick
at the
TV.
Yeah, it's kind of, you get weary of them. And
you know, it's a fine line. Now, Dennis Leary, voiceover on Ford truck is absolutely perfect.
Right.
And it's well written for him. It works great. Mike Rowe, it works well for Ford. But when you get it wrong, it's painful. And it's a crapshoot. It really is. You know, I don't automatically suggest that. you know, when agencies, you know, ask me for advice and stuff like that, I just say, boy, you better make sure it's right.
And, you know, I don't, I'm, there's lots of voiceover people out there that aren't stars but have good pipes, as they say.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know why they have this star power that we need to have someone.
Well, occasionally it works. Well, now, I think the Slattery stuff, which the audience hasn't seen, I think it's pretty good. I think he's not overused. It's very subtle, and I think it's very smart the way they're using him, and it has the chance to have a long run the way they use them. As long as they use them that way, I think it could do well for them.
John Wills in our chat room wants to know, which car company would hire Lady Gaga as a spokeswoman?
Maybe Scion.
You know what? Well, first of all, she just signed a deal with Giorgio Armani. Because Armani's, you know, the youth thing has left him. It's some $30, $40 million deal. If I had Joel Iwanick's job, I would hire Lady Gaga in a minute for some sort of wild Cadillac Super Bowl spot. Just a one shot. Mm-hmm. Why not, you know? Yeah, no, she's not going to be our 0% financing spokesperson for a spectacular. Yeah, I would think Cadillac would do it, but they're not.
Seems like she would fit in better with Scion because of the target, but they don't do a lot of high-profile TV.
Yeah.
Their thing is...
She's too big for Scion. I mean, Scion's, yeah.
Yeah, up-and-coming artists. They really do support up-and-coming artists in all genres, so that's...
But nobody's going to do it, so we don't have to worry about it. Now, one of the worst ones that was ever...
Celine Dion.
Yeah,
oh, baby. I knew you were going to say that.
Boy, that just did not work.
Oh, well, but the work, the ads themselves look like videos for her. It was not about the product. It didn't tell you anything about the Pacifica. It was the new Pacifica launch.
Yeah, that was the Peter Arnell train wreck.
Yes.
OMG. But that's all we need to say. Anything else, Ben?
Someone said, Gorski C in the chat room said his favorite awful spokesperson was the cast of Star Trek pitching Oldsmobile.
Boy, that's reaching back, but yeah, that was...
Wow.
My dad knows all about space vehicles. He directed me to the new Oldsmobile Silhouette. Its looks are stellar, and the interior is perfect for the enterprising family. The modular seats pull out easily. There's a place for everything. Compared to other forms of space travel, Silhouette is the logical choice. Right, Dad?
Eminently logical. Silhouette. Travel in space and style.
Oh my God.
What about Ringo Starr in the Oldsmobile ads? Remember that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, man. Well, you know, there's been some memorable stuff that looks great on YouTube like that. So, Ben, I guess we're done, hey?
I think we are.
Well, thanks, everybody. Gene, thanks a lot for joining our little solo deal here. It's just three of us, really, that did this show. It was Gene, myself, and Ben.
Thanks, Ben,
who pulled off all the technology. And we're just bummed that we're not in Paris. But, you know, we'll make John and Chip pay and Carmen pay for that when they're back. Thanks again for joining us. Y'all have a good evening. We'll see you next week.
Visit our website, OuterLineDetroit.tv, where you can watch us live Thursday nights at 7 p.m. Eastern. Get your daily automotive news fix with Outerline Daily and in-depth analysis and interviews with Outerline Detroit. That's all there and much more at OuterLineDetroit.tv.
Outerline After Hours is brought to you by Bridgestone, passion for excellence.